This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shemuel Bet, chapter 21. The last four chapters of Shemuel Bet are somewhat disjointed, and the chronology of the events depicted in them is not always clear. Many of the commentaries suggest that some of these events happened earlier in David's career, and sometimes that seems almost necessary to interpret it that way. But since they're not connected to the main storyline of the book, so they're saved, discussion of them is saved for the conclusion of Shemuel Bet. So we shouldn't necessarily take these four chapters to be chronologically placed in order here. There's a famine in Israel for three consecutive years, and David seeks Hashem for an explanation of why it has befallen them. We know that traditionally we interpret famine or drought as a sign of disconnect between Hashem and the Jewish people. Hashem informs David that the famine is a punishment that was actually incurred by Shaul because he massacred the Giv'onim, decimating their population. At least that's the simple meaning of the text. The Giv'onim were a group of Kena'anim that, if you recall, during the times of Yehoshua, had approached the Jewish people, pretended to be inhabitants of a faraway land, not of Kena'an, and therefore convinced Yehoshua to allow them to coexist with the Jews in Israel as partners with them. They became a kind of partner or ally to the Jews, almost like quasi-Jews, living amongst them and working together with them to draw water, to cut wood, and so on, to support the Jewish institutions. So they were very much enmeshed in Jewish community. And apparently, in some incident which is not described anywhere explicitly in the Tanakh, Shaul attacked and killed Givonim in some kind of crusade to purify the Jewish people of foreign influences. At least that's what it appears to be from the simple meaning of the text. Again, the Midrashim have other explanations of what exactly it was that Shaul did. Some suggest that his massacre of Nov, the city of Kohanim, had an economic impact on the Givonim, putting them out of work because they were charged with providing wood and water to these Kohanim. So it put them out of work and therefore in that way decimated them, destroyed them. Others say they were caught up, so to speak, in the line of fire in that massacre. It wasn't intended for them. These Midrashim are, in a way, trying to minimize, perhaps, the extent of Shaul's transgression, but the simple meaning of the text definitely is that he attacked the Givonim in order, out of some kind of zeal, religious zeal, to purify the Jews of the influence of the Givonim. And we know that there are many incidents that are not expressed, they're not explicitly described in Tanakh, but are referred to in other places in Tanakh. For example, it's only when Shaul comes to the witch at Endor that we know that Shaul went on a campaign to eliminate all the witchcraft and sorcery and other occult activity in Israel prior to that. So we didn't read about that in the main story of Shaul, but we find out about it after the fact when it becomes relevant. So here too, we never heard this story about the Givonim before. We're hearing about it here. Now, the problem, of course, is that this was in violation of the oath that Yehoshua made and the elders of Israel made to the Givonim not to harm them. And so Shaul is in violation of this oath, and because of this violation, a famine has come. Now, obviously, timeline-wise, we can see that this must have happened much earlier in the career of David, while the loss of Shaul was still fresh. David understands that only through securing the forgiveness of the Givonim is the divine wrath going to be removed from the Jewish people. He approaches the people of Givon, and he asks them what he can do to correct the wrongs that were perpetrated by the house of Shaul. The Givonim demand that seven of the male descendants of Shaul be handed over to them to be hung in retribution for the murders that he committed. David complies with their request, although he does spare the life of Mephibosheth in deference to the oath he made to Yonatan to protect his children and preserve his legacy. The Givonim hang the descendants of Shaul around the beginning of the barley harvest in the spring and leave their corpses exposed during the rainy season. The mother of two of the victims, a concubine of Shaul known as Ritzpah Bat Ayah, mourns and stands guard over them in the field, protecting their bodies from the elements as well as from wild beasts. When David hears about this, he arranges not only for the remains of the seven descendants of Shaul to be gathered up, but also for the remains of Shaul and Yehonatan to be retrieved from Yavesh Gilad, given a proper burial, together with those killed by the Givonim, in their ancestral burial plots. After all of this, the famine ended. The chapter concludes with a description of several heroic battles waged by the men of David against various Pelishti giants. These accounts give us a sense of the mightiness and skill of David's entourage of fighters. We're also told of a point in time where David no longer had the physical energy and strength to contend on the battlefield and was nearly killed. After this, the soldiers insisted that he no longer join them in combat. The text comments that the Givonim were not originally Jewish, something that students of the Tanakh already know. The question is, why is it mentioned here? The rabbis explain that the purpose of mentioning this fact here is to explain why the Givonim acted in such a cruel and heartless fashion, demanding bloody revenge from the house of Shaul for what had been done to them. Jews, the sages tell us, have compassion and mercy instilled in them and would never have sought to punish the family of Shaul in such a drastic manner. Of course, this leads us to the further question of what justified killing seven descendants of Shaul for a crime they did not commit. Not only does David fulfill what seems like an outlandish and unjust request from the Givonim, Hashem discontinues the famine shortly after, indicating that these actions were considered proper and therefore were sufficient to squelch the divine wrath and to conclude the plague that had been visited upon the Jews, the lack of food, the famine. So one possibility suggested by some of the commentaries is that the members of the house of Shaul who were punished were actually complicit on some level in the deeds of Shaul. Maybe they participated in the massacre, maybe they supported it, maybe they endorsed it. This would make the story a little bit more reasonable and comprehensible. However, I'd like to suggest an alternative possibility. Maybe the reason the text emphasizes the non-Jewish background of the Givonim is not to explain their demand, why they asked for such a cruel punishment to be visited on the descendants of Shaul, but in order to explain why David felt it necessary to acquiesce to their demand. Precisely because they were of non-Jewish origin, the Jewish people had to be extremely cautious and to go to enormous lengths to avoid any desecration of the name of Hashem. Therefore, despite the fact that the request of the Givonim was essentially unjust and reflected poorly upon them, David felt morally obligated to honor it in order to restore the sanctity of Hashem's name that had been sullied by the behavior of Shaul toward the Givonim in violation of the oath that the Jewish people had taken upon themselves. When dealing with other nations to whom we must serve as mentors and examples of divine wisdom and justice, the rules of engagement are sometimes changed and have to be more radical than when we're dealing with in-house issues among fellow Jews. Other nations are not as well schooled in the nuances of law and principle and would not be able to grasp a learned discourse on the legitimacy of punishing the children for the sins of the fathers. The imperative to demonstrate that justice is the legitimate claim of all of God's creatures, and the necessity of demonstrating, as well, the sanctity and holiness of an oath made in the name of God, forced David to take an action that would normally, in a Jewish framework, be unjust, but that was the only way he could convey to the Givonim that the holiness of God's name was upheld and that justice was carried out. Their grievance received a serious response, and the Jewish people did not take the injustices and the violation of the sacred oath lightly.